The Old Testament reading and the Gospel today speak directly about the role of fear in the face of faith, and the way that failure can get in the way whenever we have those moments where we doubt. I wanted to have us think about the Old Testament reading this morning. And life can sometimes reward us with a huge triumph. We can think of them. Some of those events that leave us euphoric. We've done something that has surpassed expectation. We're relieved because we finally got it done. We're vindicated because other people thought we couldn't do it. We're winning because actually we've got over the speed bumps and we're headed in the right direction. All the effort, the sacrifice, pays off, and we can reap the rewards. But then suddenly, sometimes, that feeling of having achieved something wonderful is stolen away. The snake on the board game that follows the previous ladder, and it takes us all the way back down the board to the first square. We find ourselves in times of increasing instances of depression and burnout. Good people doing good work find that burdens and stresses have caught up with them and overtaken. 1 Kings 19 is the lowest point in Elijah's career, one that was illustrious, one where he blazed a trail for God. And it's made all the more apparent whenever you compare chapter 19 to chapter 18. Immediately previously, Elijah is boldly facing down Jezebel's prophets, insisting, "You shall have no other gods before me." And on Mount Carmel in 1 Kings 18, we see his career peaking, only to plummet in the reading that we've just heard, where he finds himself on another mountain. Commentators see 1 Kings 19 as the story of Elijah's decommissioning and out of God's choice to use another more willing servant in his place. So here we find the prophet on the run, scared for his life, chased by King Ahab the tyrant, and a cruel, lawless wife, Jezebel. Jezebel is outraged at the killing of Baal's 450 prophets on Mount Carmel, and she vows that she will hunt him down and kill him in revenge. Elijah's response is that he is driven away by fear, and he is sinking deeper and deeper into disbelief. Why? Because only moments ago, he was soaring high and everything was good. He ends up in the wilderness, at the point where he is ready to give up on life. The tremendous physical, emotional, spiritual stress, it's actually not surprising that this soul is burning out. He's exhausted, having given everything that he could, so we find him drained and without perspective. The death threat from Jezebel is the final straw. God has other plans. He won't let this great man suffer and die quietly in the wilderness. So an angel is sent to Elijah in the desert, and there it brings him hot food and drink to sustain him. And as he moves on, he finds a cave that provides shelter and warmth for the night. So in our passage, the word of the Lord comes to Elijah in the cave. And he asks a very simple question. What are you doing here? Where else should he have been? What else should he have been doing? The question is asked twice, which makes it significant. And twice Elijah responds with the same answer, almost justifying himself, that he's been zealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, but now he is alone and in danger, fearing for his life. I suppose he thinks that God owes him at least something for what he has done, that he should be looked after. Presumably Elijah wants to see that same power that he saw on Mount Carmel being flexed once again to protect him, to come down as a consuming fire against his enemies. Where is this power? You're asking me why I'm here. I'm asking you, when are you going to do something fantastic to remove the threat against my life? So he arrives at Mount Sinai and is told by God to ascend the mountain. And while he's there, we see the parallels with the story of Moses. God passes by at a moment of revelation. And just as God passed before Moses in the book of Exodus, so Sinai becomes for Elijah a place of revelation. But maybe not as he thought it would be. He maybe thought this would be the moment where the great power of God would be revealed. And yes, the opposite actually happens. There is a wind. It's so powerful that it breaks rocks. But God isn't speaking through that. Then there's an earthquake. But again, in this tremendous power, God is not speaking. There's a fire. But God isn't there. God, like he does with Job, tries to use these tremendous forces to attempt to get the servant to reorientate themselves away from the words and the temptations to run away towards the power of God. Is the direction that God is challenging his prophet to move in. So while God isn't found in any of these powerful manifestations, each one is intended to shake or snap Elijah out of this despondent heart. Even with the shock and the awe, there's no response. So something else is tried. Silence. A sheer silence. Not one where you hear the birds call or the cars, traffic pass by, but a perfect silence. An almost nothingness in response to the nothingness that Elijah feels. Elijah's life has gone from fear to disobedience. And Elijah is given three orders. He's to go from the mountain to Hazael to make him king of Aram. He's to anoint Jehu, son of Nimshi, as the king of Israel. And then he's to anoint Elisha, son of Shaphat, as his replacement. Elijah, the once great, is at that point of being fearful and broken and doubtful. So the tasks to which he's called are eventually accomplished, but not by him. God takes another more willing prophet, Elisha, who takes on the mantle that Elijah is slowly starting to see as impossible. There's a lot of emotion and fear in this passage. And if you look back to the gospel reading as well, that's present there too. And this can speak to us in different ways. 1 Kings 19 affirms that God appears in ways that we don't expect, or when we suggest to him what we think could work. And he responds in a way that we really don't like the sound of or the look of. It's his way of achieving his goals and his way of helping us. What makes it harder to trust God is when we're overwhelmingly fearful. Because that doubt that appears in us means that whatever God does, an earthquake, a fire, nothing will ever answer the questions that we have. We might be looking for the earthquake or the fire and find that it's not what God is offering. Just like Elijah was surprised by the form that God took outside the cave in his hour of need, he wants the power, but not in the voice of silence. However, it's no less powerful than the fire that came down that Elijah saw on Mount Carmel when his opposition was destroyed. God speaks in the silence with a plan, with a direction that he knows is the right way. Power to save through silence shows God's creative readiness to reach us by any means, even the most surprising, even beyond the point of our brokenness. So his responding to us in ways we don't expect, through ways we may not necessarily like or want, are his ways of showing his love to us.